Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the new screensavers is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. The new screensavers is brought to you by FreshBooks, the easy-to-use cloud accounting software for small business owners. Make 2018 your most productive year yet. Try it free for 30 days at FreshBooks.com/NSS. And by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully so you can be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. Get started at rocketmortgage.com/NSS.
Blockchain Explains, Siri versus OK Google, and your own personal cloud live from the Twitty Side Studios in beautiful Petaluma, California. It's the new Screensavers.
Welcome to the Screensavers, episode 141 for Saturday, January 27th, 2018. I am Leo Laporte.
And I am Patrick Norton. And Woody would like you to know that I should have read the opening more slowly.
No, you did it perfectly.
So I will speak in an increasingly slow manner as the show goes. I can't even do it with a straight face.
It's like the sloth. What's that movie with the sloth, the slow talker?
Zootopia.
Zootopia. That's the funniest thing ever, except it's like you also want to strangle it.
Yes.
Because he's telling a joke. Very slowly. Patrick does not talk slowly, so it's got us. You're looking more like a lumberjack every time I see you.
Well, I wore a plaid shirt today, and I apologize. I would have trimmed my beard.
No, I love it.
But my, like, six-week-old beard trimmer died. Barely gave up in frustration. Thanks, Wall.
Well, I don't know what this is, but it ain't beard. Is that Brillo you making me cut? That is, can I just, oh, I love that. Oh, Sarah must love that too. That is so nice. I wish I could have a beard like that.
You could.
Yeah, just in a year or two.
This, I'll try. You could have the
is
beard,
that what happened?
I'll take the hair.
All the hair went into your face?
No, because this hair is all baby fine and soft.
I know,
and
it's
this
cute.
Hair you can use to clean rust off of, you know, old garden tools.
It's so nice to see my old buddy Patrick, and what a great show we have for you today. We put one really good one together. Do you know, I know you do, don't say a thing. Because he already told me what he thinks of blockchain. Actually, we've talked a lot about cryptocurrencies and Bitcoin, but the underlying technology, blockchain.
Right. Which is showing up everywhere.
Like the Long Island iced tea company that renamed itself Long Island Blockchain.
Container.
And its
shipping.
Value went up 400% even though it has not.
There's a blockchain bubble, people.
We're in the blockchain bubble.
If you're
bubble.
Talking to a VC, figure out how to fit blockchain into your gaming system or whatever else is in there.
I thought instead of talking to money guys on this one, we talk to some security guys. So we have two experts who will not only explain blockchain, but talk about the real legitimate uses for blockchain. One used to work for the CIA, and one used to work for Twitter. You decide, all right? We'll have them head-to-head. Which is better, speaking of head-to-head?
Siri versus Google Assistant. Yeah, Megan and Jason were locked in a small room with sticks. And one of them's going to walk out of there not dead and declare the winner in the Siri versus Google Assistant battle.
Who do you think's going to win, Siri or Google?
If I was basing it on the amount of... It's kind of funny, right? Because there's, you know, Amazon's Alexa, and then Google Assistant kind of gets, you know, Google gets really serious about a year later.
Yeah.
In the year since, Google's kind of caught up in a lot of ways. And if you looked at CES 2018, it would be Google spending all of
the
money.
You went down to CES, and Google was everywhere. They
Google
were on the
everywhere.
Monorail.
They were on the monorail. They were in front of the Fashion Island Mall. They were on the back of taxi
cabs.
Those
guys with the little Google Where's Waldo hats.
There were guys handing out the little flippers, but instead of being for naughty things, it was Google Assistant.
Google Assistant.
They were everywhere. But that said, they were also, except for Samsung, who's like, Bixby! We can still do Bixby!
Are they going to put Bixby on the S9? What do you think? We'll find out in about a month. I think they're going to,
based on their keynote at Samsung, I'd say there might even be another Bixby button on the S9.
Two. Let's make two Bixby buttons.
Two, three Bixby buttons. But the point is, though, is like, you know, I think Amazon's still in the lead. Google's following. I saw a single HomeKit product at CES.
One. I just ordered the Home Hub. I'll talk about this in a second. But first, look at that. Look at that.
I
caught that in my network. It's a canary. You know what's cool about this is to you and me,
right. It
says canary. It looks like a canary. To a bad guy, it looks like my Synology NAS with all sorts of juicy files on it. I'll talk about, this is not something for the average home. I'll talk about what the big boys use to snag hackers. If Sony had been using this, it'd be a different world today.
Jeez.
The interview would be on movie screens everywhere. No, even then. Megan has a review of the Apollo personal cloud system. We'll find out if that's right for you.
Cloud storage. I'm a Brasilio Sync kind of guy. We'll talk about that.
That's the
day.
Old BitTorrent Sync. They changed the name.
I don't know why they changed the name.
Brasilio. Yeah, I like it.
Yeah.
I like it. And then Nux.
Can you run AutoCAD or Photoshop on a Nook?
Nook!
We'll
That's
tell
a call
you
for help.
What you might give up. If
call
you
for help. Mailbag questions, too, but let's start with the hot topics of the week. Did you see? I got to show you this. This is funny. You saw this. Burger King. I don't know why they did this.
Rage.
This
is fascinating.
They did a. Is it an ad? It's a 3-minute.
They couldn't figure out how to put blockchain into an ad. So this was the next biggest. They were like, what is the Google, what is the YouTube trending search? And they're like, no, blockchain, cryptocurrency. Why can't delete expletive if I buy a GPU? Oh, net neutrality. So we'll do it with hamburgers.
Well, I feel like their thoughts are on the right.
Yeah.
What they decided is, people don't understand net neutrality. So they brought in some actors. These are not real Burger King employees into a Burger King. But they are real people who came in and they said, you have to pay more if you want your burger faster. Watch the reaction. It's crazy.
Here's what I'll do. You have the bag. And I can put it in the bag in 42 seconds. Hold on. 10 seconds.
We don't make the rules.
You just enforce these ridiculous rules.
Fortunately, we have to.
The customers were not in on this.
I was being taken
Watch this guy on the
sense.
Left.
Just as a customer coming in to get their food, it felt like a power move.
They already changed the policies overnight or whatever.
I didn't think that ordering a Whopper would really open my eyes up to net neutrality.
The Whopper actually told me about net neutrality. It's stupid, but true.
It's awesome. If you get a chance, watch this video. The internet should be like a Whopper. Right. I don't know how, but somehow that's how. It's good for Burger King, but also it did help explain for a lot of people.
I don't know if it explained it, because it's not like Comcast is going to be like, hey.
That's true.
Hey, we'll stream your Netflix.
What they did say is if you pay $26, you can have your Whopper right now. Otherwise, you have to wait.
Which is actually, I mean, one of the, I got to give credit to Molly Wood over at Marketplace, because she did this interview with Agate Pai, and his
did
whole.
She really? She interviewed
him? Yeah, she interviewed him.
Wow.
And it was one of those things where he was like, people aren't going to wake up the day after we get rid of this and suddenly find out they can't access their email or their internet or all the things they really like. And it's like, and he's like, you know, these things never happen. And it's like, except
there's
a big list of that.
Yeah, they have happened.
Comcast and Netflix. Comcast, I can't use that word because it's a legal term that we've gotten in trouble for using before. Comcast negotiated to get money out of Netflix by ruining the service that their customers were getting.
Yeah. So AT&T somehow has decided it's on the side of net neutrality, even though they were the ones who sued the FCC in the first place, saying you can't regulate us. They have notoriously used their power to hurt smaller businesses with, you know, slowing down their internet.
AT&T wants one set of rules for the entire United States, right? You've got, you know, Montana's already, you know, working on its own.
The state of Montana has, the governor actually did it as an executive action, said, we will not give you a contract if you do not adhere to net neutrality as an ISP.
Right. No, that's Governor Cuomo in New York. Not a fan of Governor Cuomo in New York, but he basically, what can he do to irritate or agitate over net neutrality. So no government agency in New York can buy its internet service from an ISP that does not support net neutrality, right? So
that's the only way the states can do it, really.
Well, they can create state level laws, right? If I am the state of Montana, I can have concealed carry, and apparently I can also have net neutrality laws because, we're getting sort of a state's versus federal rights. This is driving AT&T nuts because AT&T is thinking like, we will have 39 different sets of laws to maintain. No. One law for the entire land.
So they took out full-page ads this week in all the newspapers in the land saying Congress needs to... And I actually agree with it.
Which is delightfully old school.
I agree with it, though. It should be... the problem is, of course, Congress is never going to do it. Especially, you may get the Senate, but you're not going to get the House. And actually, we're close to getting the Senate.
Let me do a quick... You keep talking. I'm going to do a Google search to see how much AT&T paid
Congress
legislation...
to keep them from doing it. It's very confusing.
Or maybe how much, if AT&T wants to lobby to make this law happen.
They could.
They could.
Don't just take out ads in the paper. Buy some more Congress members. They're cheap. You can get them by the dozen nowadays. Anyway, I don't know what's going on, but you know what? I do agree with AT&T. Maybe this isn't something for the FCC. They didn't like Title II regulation because it was broader than just regulating net neutrality. Not that the FCC ever did anything broader than that, but they don't like that. Okay, fine. Let's get Congress to make a law. I don't disagree with that. If we can get Congress to make a law, that's great.
AT&T only spent $16,780,000 on lobbying in 2017.
Amateurs. Wow. Really that much? $16 million?
Yeah.
You think they get more for their money?
Well, maybe they got exactly what they wanted.
Maybe they got exactly what they wanted.
Oh
my God! I ordered my HomePod. Are you happy for me?
No.
Friday. Yes. Yeah, so you're an audiophile.
No. I everything I've heard says the HomePod sounds great. But I have the same issue with the HomePod.
But I'd like to hear what you think because you are an audiophile.
It's not. I mean, it's.
It's about the size of this giant thing of soda.
Well, yeah. It's everyone I know who's heard it says it sounds.
It's a little
great.
Fatter.
Wait, it's designed to sort of.
Oh. We finally got the steel. They've upgraded ours. There it is. That's a HomePod simulation. So it's a little. It's 7 inches tall. It's a little fatter than a giant soda.
It's supposed to automatically adjust for the room.
It won't quench your thirst.
It won't do multi-room at launch.
Nor will it do stereo. They did say that later this year, both the ability to pair another one and make a stereo pair and multi-room music, which is what Sonos does so well.
If you want to use Spotify with it, you're going to have to basically AirPlay to it.
You have to be an Apple Music person to use Siri.
And apparently, if you have a large collection of music files that you did not purchase through iTunes, it will not play them. 9to5Mac reported on that.
What?
One.
Well, we will get ours. I ordered it. I got up early Friday morning. And I ordered a HomePod. $350 later, it'll be coming February 9th. So 2 weeks from today, we'll play the HomePod for you. And we can finally get rid of this toilet paper wrapped in black cloth. Our simulated.
Sonos did a really nice deal where you get two Sonos Play 1s, which don't have ALEXA, are $300. The Sonos 1, which has ALEXA in it, they did a deal to drop the price down, 2 for $349, which means you get stereo separation.
You get two of those.
And probably just as much, if not more, bass.
Do you think that's the question? I have a Sonos One at home, so I'll bring them both in on the 9th, and we'll get some sense anyway. By the way, Amazon now dominates the speaker market, the talking speakers, 69%, 31 million units. Google, 31%, and they gained big time over the holiday with 40% of the units sold. Google was really big at CES.
Google's catching up fast. There's a lot of devices with Google Assistant coming.
All right, coming up, we're going to talk. We got lots of stuff. We're going to have a face-off between Siri and the Google Assistant because Jason Howell has Megan's Siri on her iPhone 10. They swapped, and she has his Pixel 2 XL with the Google Assistant.
Sounds very complicated.
It's very sexy. They swapped with each other, and we're going to get their reviews of the two voice assistants. But first, blockchain. Blockchain is all over the news, right?
Yes.
I know it's related to Bitcoin. Bitcoin uses blockchain to keep track of transactions. I know that because in order to get to my Bitcoin wallet, I had to download 200 gigabytes of blockchain.
Are you familiar with accounting?
Not at all. But fortunately, we've got two fellas who are, they're coming up in just a second. They're going to explain blockchain to you. But before we do that, I do want to give Megan and Jason. What did you say? We put them in a room with sticks?
Yes.
Let's watch. Death Battle.
It's week two. One, two, this is 14 days. Wow, we're only 2 weeks into Twit Switch right now. Me with the iPhone 10, Megan with
Pixel.
The Pixel 2 XL.
2 XL.
And today, we're going to pit the smart assistants, or are they very smart, against each other. I've got Siri.
I've got Google. I think we already know who's going to win. But
do we? Mm-hmm. I mean, I think I know. Mm-hmm. And I think it might have something to do with the little lady we call Siri. How about this first one we do is a speed of launch.
Okay, so I'll count to three, and then at three, we'll hit. See who can launch fastest. Ready?
All right.
Wait, your phone is open already.
Oh, should it
okay,
not be?
No. Okay, got it.
Okay. On three, right?
Yes, okay. On three. One, two, three.
I think you got there just a split second
before,
and this is where we get in a nice transcript. Hey, they both transcribed. That's nice.
That is nice.
All right, on the next one, let's ask about stock prices because they might offer different information. I'm going to ask Siri. Hey, Siri, show me the stock price for Microsoft.
Microsoft finished higher today. Closing at $92.33.
A lot of information.
That's a jump of 51 cents, or 0.56%.
All right, now you go with assistant.
Okay. Hey, Google. What is Microsoft stock?
Microsoft Corporation is trading at $92.95 a share after hours, up 0.67% from closing.
It looks kind of empty.
Yeah, no pretty graph?
No.
You have to click to get to the graph.
Graphs go a long way.
Mm-hmm. You might have won that one.
All right.
Okay, I've got one. Ready?
All right.
Hey, Google. Show me pictures of my dog.
I found this in your Google Photos.
Look, all pictures of my dog.
And that is your dog.
That is my dog.
Wow, that's smart.
And I didn't tell Google
images of
that
Gilbert.
That...
Here you are.
It's like
still listening
to
you. All right, so I'm going to try and see if Siri can identify my dog. Hey, Siri, show me pictures of my dog.
Here are some images of my dog I found on the web.
Oh, here are some images of, quote, my dog.
That's
the search done through Bing.
That okay, kind of one of those looks like my dog, but it's not my dog.
Yeah, no, something. None of these are our dogs.
Okay.
All right, I'm selfie obsessed, so of course I'm going to ask Siri to take a selfie. Hey Siri, take a selfie. It's not taking it.
You have to press the button yourself.
Right, that's what you do?
Yeah.
You do the peace sign? Uh-huh. Okay, great.
See, I get that because maybe you said like, hey, Shmiri, make a belfie.
And you don't want it to actually
right.
take a picture?
Yeah.
Okay, I guess that kind of sort of makes sense somewhat.
All right. Hey, Google, take a selfie.
Oh, two. Oh, it's counting down. That's nice. See?
So it knew what I wanted and it did it.
Yeah, exactly.
What about having a conversation?
Yeah, that's important. I talk to my devices all the time and I expect them to talk back to me.
Okay, so I'll start with this one. Hey, Google, who was president of the United States in 2011?
Barack Obama was president of the United States in 2011.
Who was his wife?
He's been married to Michelle Obama since 1992.
Okay, it has a little bit of a flow. Who mm-hmm. was his wife? It understands that. Okay, I'll try it with Siri. Hey, Siri. Who was president of the United States in 2011?
It's Barack Obama.
Who was his wife? Does it do that or do I have to fire it again? Hey, Siri. Who was his wife?
Barack Obama is married to Michelle Obama.
All right. But again, interesting to see. You get a lot more contextual, like, displayed information
yeah.
on Siri than you do on Assistant.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if there was a winner on that one.
I don't know either. How many kids do they have?
Two. Michelle Obama's children are Sasha Obama and Malia Ann Obama.
How many kids do they have?
Here is what I found.
Oh.
Yeah, all right. This might be a tie.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know if you give Siri a little bit more because some of the presentation is maybe a little bit nicer.
Yeah,
I mean, this
maybe
one you don't have as much information, but the previous one you did.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess we could give it to Siri, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, sure.
Okay. What if we ask them what they think of each other?
Oh, yes, let's do that.
Hey, Google, what do you think of Siri?
You know Siri? What a small world. Hope she's doing well.
Oh, nice.
She's right here. Right next to you, literally. What do you think of Google?
I think the acquisition of information and intelligence by human beings through virtual assistants is a very good thing.
Oh. I mean, if you wanted to, like, if you wanted to hang out in a bar with Google or Siri, who would you choose?
I think Siri's really, really tired
yeah.
at this point.
Hey, Google. Send a text message to Jason that says, I totally won this one.
Which number do you want to text? For got it. Do you want to send this text or change it?
Send it.
Okay.
It's totally not going to work. There's no way this is going to work. I'm not going to get it on my phone. Nope. Assistant's going to lose if I don't. Ah, dang it. Fine. Hey, Siri. Send a message to Megan that says, you're right. You did totally win this one.
Your message to Megan Moroney says, you. Ready to send it?
Yes, send. You know what I'm talking about, Megan. You. All right. I think that summarized it pretty perfectly.
Yeah, I think so.
I don't know how many more of these we have. There's probably other aspects of these devices, these platforms that we can compare against each other. But I think you won this round.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll be back. I'll be back, Megan.
Hey, Google. I love you.
Wow. If you love me, you must think I'm really helpful. Best day ever.
Oh, I don't like that. I don't want them to be that human. It bothers me. So I'm confused. So Megan says she won, but she won using the Google Assistant. She's the iOS person, but she won using the Google Assistant. So really, Jason won because he's the host of All About Android. And after the switch is over, he's getting his phone back and she's going to be back with Siri. She better be nice to Siri. If I were her, I'd be careful. What do you use?
I don't use Siri, and I carry an iPhone.
Do you talk to your phone or your home or
you know, I got a Anchor has the Rove, like Vivo.
I just got my Vivo today. Is it good?
Amazon. Yeah, it's Alexa.
Yeah.
So now my 22-year-old mechanical diesel truck, I'm talking to it like
Kit. See, that's great.
It's a little awkward sometimes.
Does she sound like this?
No.
What's your response?
No.
What do you want, Norton?
That'd be perfect.
Works better than Echo Siri. Would adjust the voice depending on the vehicle.
I mean, literally, I've used Siri like I use Siri once every 3 or 4 months to realize, yeah, Siri's still a pain
in
my ass.
It's still dopey, yeah.
And,
but you have to admit, watching that, it's gotten a little bit better. I mean, it's a little. I think it's improved.
And having one broken leg is a little bit better than having two.
Right,
actually,
you're
probably
right.
It's a lot better than having two. All broken
right.
Legs.
Blockchain. Why do I need 200 gigabytes on my hard drive just to get my Bitcoin wallet? Don't say a word. I see that look in your eyes. We've got two blockchain experts on the line, starting with Kevin Quenison. Am I saying that right, Kevin?
Okay. I'll go with it.
Kenison? How would you like him to say it, sir?
Kenson is the French way to say it.
Oh, you're French. Kenson.
Yeah.
All right. Like chanson. He is a blockchain expert from Twitter, formerly of Twitter's AI group, Twitter Cortex. Wonderful to have you, Kevin. Thanks for joining us.
Wonderful.
Also with us on the right, here's his book right behind him, Online Danger, How to Protect Yourself and Your Loved Ones from the Evil Side of the Internet, a.k.a. Patrick Norton.
Excuse me.
Eric Cole, Dr. Cole is the author of that book and former, I like this, technical director for the CIA, also served on the Cybersecurity Commission for the former president, President Obama. Great to have you, Eric. Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
Nice to see you. I guess we'll go back and forth on this because we have two experts.
Okay.
So I'll let you start, Eric. What the hell is blockchain?
To me, the easiest way to think of it, it's going back to 1995 technology where we're doing peer-to-peer. So instead of having a central server that stores everything, we have hundreds of peers that are all updating information simultaneously So this way, if you go in and try to hack one or two of them, you won't be able to alter their transactions because the other 200 will have that information and be able to counter it.
Oh, so that makes sense. Like Napster, right?
It's a giant distributed ledger.
Exactly.
Okay. Do you agree, Kevin? Is there anything you would add to that definition?
I think it's a very good way to define it.
Yeah.
I think another way to see blockchain is indeed some security which is put on top of peer-to-peer transactions to ensure that those transactions, let's call them a Bitcoin, is only spent once if you have one Bitcoin, so that you only spend the amount that you do have.
Is that where this all began, was with Bitcoin? Is this Satoshi Nakamoto's invention?
Yep.
So that's pretty clever. Mm-hmm. Do all cryptocurrencies use a form of blockchain? Kevin, go ahead and answer that.
Well, you could certainly say so. I think that's what is today defining the term cryptocurrency. Then there are different variations of what those currencies are. In some cases, we call also we talk of tokens, and tokens, the way they are defined as cryptocurrencies somewhat, are actually built of an existing blockchain technology called Ethereum.
Yeah, Ethereum is a second kind of cryptocurrency. It's mm-hmm. rapidly, I think it's the number two most capitalized. It's rapidly mm-hmm. gaining in popularity, partly because of the volatility of Bitcoin, but also because Bitcoin is so slow and so expensive. Is that because, let me ask Eric this, is that because Bitcoin's blockchain is so big that Bitcoin is so slow and
about the mining or like the spending?
If you want to make a Bitcoin transaction, it could take hours, mm-hmm. right? I could go to Burger King and forget the Whopper. I'll be waiting until the Bitcoin cleared. Could be a long, long time. Is that accurate, Eric?
Yes. When you look at the sheer number of systems and how long that blockchain is, imagine when you went to the bank and you were going to deposit money. They had to check with 300 other banks, and all 300 banks had to update the ledgers send you that information back.
Yikes.
So in terms of and computing power and electrical power that are consumed, in one sense, you know, the thing that makes it secure, which is all of this distributed data, also makes it incredibly inefficient.
Correct. And in my opinion, you have to remember that the real driver of why blockchain is behind cryptocurrency is really for it to be anonymous and untraceable.
Right.
So this way you can do transactions and nobody really knows who's doing the transaction. And to be able to cover it up, you can have cryptocurrency without blockchain, but then it would be regulated and monitored by a government.
You'd have to have a central bank, which is basically what we have right now, is fiat currencies regulated by a central bank.
Well, if you
want to
get the value out of the blockchain and into something you can spend by a non-blockchain supporting vendor,
So let me ask Kevin this then. So, okay, I think we get the idea of blockchain. It's kind of a peer-to-peer ledger system. We see other cryptocurrencies like Ethereum using it. But really, blockchain's become a buzzword. I mentioned Long Island Iced Tea changing their name to Long Island Blockchain. We've seen recording artists use blockchain, I don't understand how, to deliver albums.
Right.
We've heard about blockchain being used in all these other ways.
Container shipping. I mean,
could you explain that to me, Kevin? And even in AI, I don't get it. Talk to me like a fifth grader.
Well, blockchain is in some way a database that records historical transactions in a very secure way.
Okay, I get that. Database, secure transactions. Got that. All right.
So in that way, it is very useful to a lot of use cases that can benefit from historical record of data. So these data could be transactions, like currency transactions, but also if we're thinking about shipping pipelines, it could be that package went from the ship to the truck to something else, to the house, or these fish got fished and then It's an organic fish, which is tracked by the government and then verified through blockchain-enabled IoT devices through the trajectory over the supply chain.
That makes sense. So it's a distributed, decentralized, secure database that can store anything a database can store. How do you solve the problem, though, that Eric was just describing of the blockchain getting so big that it gets unwieldy and slow?
Well, so to be clear, the slowness and the expensive aspect of Bitcoin today is not a fundamental requirement for the blockchain technology per se. The reason Bitcoin is slow and the reason Bitcoin is expensive to secure, it's a byproduct of the consensus algorithm that Bitcoin utilizes, which is called proof of work. And this proof of work is designed to require people to spend some energy, in that case, electricity, to ensure that the record, historical transaction of record, could not be hacked.
It's a feature, not a bug,
It's a feature, and you already have other blockchains that have other ways to other consensus algorithms, which are not proof of work. So, for instance, in Ethereum, they're finalizing a system called proof of stake. Also, other blockchains called Tezos are already built on proof of stake, where the stake you put is not, in that case, energy or electricity. It is existing coins or tokens or currencies that you do have in the blockchain. So it's some sort of closer to a voting system where people vote with their stake, aka money, in the blockchain.
Let me ask you, Eric, since you focus on cybersecurity, one of the things we know about Bitcoin is how many people have lost money in Bitcoin. In fact, there's another Bitcoin exchange just lost $400 million.
Well, and there's kind of two separate problems. One is people either losing devices.
Well, I lost my wallet. I have 7.85 Bitcoin, but I can't remember my password. That's fairly common.
Oh, I have a friend of mine volunteered to crack that for you.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. And then there are brute forcers. I don't know if it'll work with me. And then, but there's also the issue of Bitcoin just disappearing.
Yeah, another exchange, I think, in Japan got hit for $400 million.
So, Eric, is Bitcoin inherently dangerous?
Yeah, to me, the big problem is it hasn't been out long enough. And if you look in any area, functionality always leads, and then security comes behind it.
Right.
And we just haven't had enough time to really test it. And if you really think of Bitcoin, it's not cyber currency, it's a cyber stock. Because the value can fluctuate and change.
Yeah.
If I have a dollar in the bank, I'll have a dollar in the bank next week.
Right.
If I have a Bitcoin that's worth a dollar, it could be worth a million or it could be worth nothing. So it's not really at a currency point because it can fluctuate and change at will.
Well, so, it's not merely the volatility. It's also the cost of transactions, which has gotten very high thanks to this proof of work system that the original Bitcoin used.
Is blockchain better employed in places other than cryptocurrency? I mean,
maybe. I'm starting to think it might be. Let's give this one to Kevin.
Well, I mean, there are already incredible use cases of blockchain technology that have been exploding in 2017, which is fundraising. So they've been
ICOs, initial ICOs coin indeed. Offerings.
And, yeah. And indeed, and this year, ICO, which is fundraising for projects in their ID stage, so pre-product stage, which from a company or startup perspective correspond to the seed or pre-seed funding stage. So ICOs raised more money in 2017 than venture funding or angel investment. So then more money than the traditional ways and mechanism for raising pre-seed or seed money for companies. So it's an incredible change and already a killer feature of the Ethereum blockchain in that case that allowed to define through codes on the blockchain contracts, which defines what the configuration of the fundraising, meaning how much money is given, what is that money turning into, how are the money maybe converted into tokens, how are those tokens distributed over how long of a vesting schedule, for instance. So all those things are done, and they're already disrupting the traditional funding of new companies and allow great ideas and great teams from the whole world to actually get a chance to raise funding, whereas they might otherwise not have that access.
There are risks associated with ICOs, though, because they're not regulated like other funding systems. I know that's both an advantage and a disadvantage. should average people like me and Patrick stay away from ICOs? Should it be somebody who's really knowledgeable about the field before you plunk down cash?
Ah! You know, it's just like the stock market.
Eric, what do you think?
You can lose everything. Have a great day. Go play, people.
It is no worse than the stock market, I suppose.
To me, it's like going to Vegas.
Yeah.
If you want to have high risk, high rewards, it's a great area to play. You can make a ton of money, but you can lose a lot.
It's not unsafe, though, or is it?
Define safe.
Well, can you get scammed with an ICO? I think people have, haven't they?
People get scammed with stocks.
They get scammed with everything.
Corner. Right. They get scammed at ATMs. They get scammed over the phone.
It's a sexier scam, though. It's a with it hip modern.
How many fake emails have you gotten this week telling you to send them your information so you can get your tax refund early?
Yeah. I want to talk about AI because this is something Kevin focuses on. What's the relation AI, which is also, by the way, another hot buzzword, right? What is the relationship between AI and blockchain? That one really baffles me.
Well, there's something which is often associated with blockchain, the technology, is the idea of not having a central body. So you do not have to trust a bank or such a centralized institution that can be hacked. So everything is decentralized.
Right.
So blockchain as a technology is associated with decentralization, where the whole network in that way belongs to each of the nodes of the network. So there's this equality between the users and the network itself. So some issues that people have been raising with AI is that AI to really shine does require a massive amount of information. And this information, this data, is most of the time right now aggregated by large tech companies, so Google, Facebook, and so on. So you have a mechanism, which is a centralization mechanism of data, which makes it harder for new companies to compete in the AI field since they do not have access to such a large amount of data. Thus, blockchain with this decentralization structure changed the rule of the game a little bit in that it allows to blend data which could be produced by members of a blockchain and the value which is associated with that data through an economy built on the blockchain. In that case, you could imagine and envision having decentralized data markets that train decentralized AI systems, which by the sheer scale of the network, which is a network where each contributors are incentivized to produce data, managed to reach levels of quality which become able to compete with Google and Facebook and those large tech entities.
Wow. But highly decentralized, and yet blockchain allows them to collaborate, essentially.
Exactly.
So
without requiring to trust a central party, which aggregates these data. The data would be decentralized and owned by everyone in the network.
So blockchain is not cryptocurrency. Blockchain is a decentralized ledger system that allows us to maintain authority across a distributed group, blockchain is a tool that can be employed in many businesses, essentially to, you know, create a chain of custody, if you will, of either, you know, a Ethereum, either something more ethereal like a stock or a coin or a cryptocurrency, or it could be tied into a tracking device or knowledge.
Yeah.
Or, you know, a container, assuming you can't spoof the tag on the container or the number on the container, which is a problem with existing technologies. Are we in the middle of a blockchain bubble? Is it just completely out of control?
Look at this, Maersk doing it.
Yeah. Well, there's also banana chain or
pork chop chain.
I mean, go ahead, answer the question.
I mean, I wouldn't call that a bubble, personally. I'm a believer of a long-term demand for cryptocurrencies, which is somewhat what is correlating with the value of the cryptocurrency market right now, which is expectations towards future demand of those currencies, which will then drive the price up.
Right.
So people do see that blockchain is a technology that can have incredible impact on society at large by removing inefficient organizations, inefficient processes. So supply chain is an example. There's other contracts, legal binding contracts, which could be done in a sort of automated, very cheap way through the blockchain. We're talking, for instance, about also titles of ownership of a house. So those are these fundamental needs, which sometimes if folks are in a country that doesn't have the chance of a stable government, might not have actual access to a secure solution for storing the title, the ownership of the land, or the ownership of the house. So there's really a broad scale of application of technologies that are unhackable and can sustain time, which sort of in the world of the crypto enthusiast does correlate or does imply a significant higher value that it could that it is even today.
How about you, Eric? Blockchain bubble or legitimate value in the future?
I mean, to me, it does have value. But it's one of the things we love to do is give new names to existing technology.
Yeah.
So the idea of having a peer-to-peer distributed network that can use smaller computers to get the same effect as a large system has been around. We're just giving it a cool name. I do need to call out what my colleague said about unhackable. That is not true. Everything can be hacked. And if you take control of enough peers in that blockchain, it can actually be hacked. To me, it hasn't been out long enough, and there hasn't been big enough stakes. But over the next 18 months, you will see more and more attacks against blockchain, and it absolutely can be hacked if you get enough resources. It's very naive to say something's unhackable.
Well, so I meant to say unhackable as an approximation, sure. So Bitcoin even itself does not guarantee 100%. Doesn't guarantee 100% the validity of transactions. It's near 100%. So the likelihood the transaction doesn't happen is very, very small. So we're not in absolute terms. Yet, at an approximation, you can say that the bounty for hacking Bitcoin is its market capitalization.
Right.
So it's hundreds of billions of dollars.
Right.
So in that way,
it's a lot of incentive.
Something that exactly could be hacked, yet the incentive right now is so high that it's a sort of a good guarantee that people tried, and it might be, if I had to trust one network over the other, I would trust existing technologies and Bitcoin more than others.
Do you think this is something, Eric, that people need to know and understand, that average people need to know and understand, or is it something we can just ignore? I mean, most people don't understand how the, you know, banking system works or the check clearing works. Is it like that? Is it something that is infrastructure that we don't need to know? Or do we really need to understand how blockchain works? Yeah, well.
I don't think they need to take advanced crypto classes, but I do think they need to understand that it is not as stable and it is not regulated like regular currency is today, because a lot of people are getting caught up in the hype.
Right.
And I'm seeing people that are losing a lot of money and getting into a lot of trouble very quickly because they think it's regulated and it's not.
They treat it like the stock market, for instance.
Yeah.
You know, they're getting into speculation and so forth. And that's very risky indeed. I also worry about ICOs. I know there are people who have been taking advantage of it. Mm-hmm. I look at, though, there's an ICO, this Telegram ICO, where they're trying to raise more than $2 billion. Pavel Durov is trying to raise huge amounts of money for its own cryptocurrency. I'm not going to say one way or the other whether that's a good investment or not, but I think that's just fascinating to watch this happen. Kevin, it sounds like you're pretty bullish on this. Would you invest in Telegram's ICO?
Well, what's very interesting with the ICO phenomenon is that the information is out for people to judge by themselves.
Right.
There's
no gatekeeper.
I wouldn't.
Yeah.
And so there are white papers that explain, well, here's what we're doing and here's how we expect that network to gain value in the future. So it's very important to read those.
Yeah.
So once you read those, then there are ICO that make more sense than others. I'm really bullish for the more fundamental layers, things like decentralized storage, decentralized mm-hmm. compute, custody. You were talking about losing your keys, decentralized exchanges. So all the things that make the value proposition of blockchains and cryptocurrencies today easier to leverage, more secure, that's the sort of the things which I think will have a lot of value in the future than some products built on top or some ICO sort of companies just turning into blockchain because they are doing peer-to-peer transactions. Was mentioned before, it's less proven that might have long-term value. It's way to be seen. So it's way riskier.
Kevin, thank you so much for joining us. Kevin Kenesson is formerly at Twitter's AI group, Twitter Cortex. It looks like you're at the Polytechnic now. Is that where you are these days?
Well, I left Twitter recently, and I'm now and I've been excited about it. It's been wonderful to spend the time there and to build the AI group. I'm now starting a new company.
Nice.
And around those things we talked about today.
Congratulations.
And I'm excited about that.
That's cool. Eric Cole, author of Online Danger, How to Protect Yourself and Your Loved Ones from the Evil Side of the Internet. Thank you for joining us today. I appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure.
I think I'm coming away with a little bit better understanding of the excitement of this and the potential risks. But I think in the general scheme of things, this is very exciting, right?
It's going to be interesting to see where it goes.
Yeah.
I'm curious where it goes. I
feel like this is the future.
There are many futures.
There are many futures. Are many we all futures. Live in one version or another.
In 10 years, we may be swapping welding for, food from Eureka County. Who knows?
Who knows?
Where it's all going to end up.
Thank you, Kevin. Thank you, Eric. And thank you. I hope that you come away with a little bit of an understanding, a little more of an understanding of what all these terms are being bandied about. Our show today brought to you by FreshBooks. I've got to tell you, for me, accounting was never the reason I got into any of this. I am not an accountant. I don't know anything about this. But I have to say, when you're in, as a freelancer in business, you need to do a little bit of accounting, particularly those.
You need to invoice.
You need to invoice.
FreshBooks. let me help out later. FreshBooks.com changed my life.
Do you use it too?
I've used it.
Changed
I paid
my
for
life.
It out of pocket for years.
Yep.
It went from me being like, oh, I have no money. I should have invoiced 6 weeks ago
yes,
to FreshBooks
you've been there.
Making it incredibly easy to send out invoices easily.
I was invoicing Rogers in Canadian dollars.
Them.
That was one reason I didn't want to do it because I had to do the conversion.
Right.
I also had to get all the expenses and the receipts together and then FreshBooks made it so much easier. But this is 2004. Now, we fast forward 13, 14 years.
And FreshBooks still makes it easier.
They still make it easier. 10 million users. They do everything. It turns out when you keep track of bills, invoices sent out, accounts receivable, accounts paid, and expenses, You're doing bookkeeping without even knowing it. And that FreshBooks dashboard and the new FreshBooks site tells you, I mean, like one of the fundamental things, I never knew if I was making money, right? Am I making money? Until tax time. Now you'll know your profit, your receivables. You can tell who's paid, who hasn't paid, who's even viewed the invoices. All of that's available. You'll save time and you'll get paid about twice as fast because you can accept credit cards. All of a sudden, just by signing up at FreshBooks.com/NSS, you can accept credit cards in the invoice. Turns out your clients do want to pay you. You just have to make it easy for them. No more chasing clients for payments. You don't have to bring the checks to the bank. It all happens directly from your invoice. You can create proposals in FreshBooks. This is a new feature. They're always adding new features. Rich text content, images, customizable sections, showcase the value you bring to prospective clients. And then when they become clients, they're already in the system and it makes it very easy for you to create new invoices, to keep track of what you're doing. Bill for time by client, by project. You can even have different rates for each service you offer. Put your business on autopilot. From payment reminders to late fees, automate as much or as little as you'd like to so you can get back to doing what you love. Make 2018 your most productive year yet. Try FreshBooks free for 30 days. FreshBooks.com/NSS. When they ask you, how'd you hear about us? You say the new screensavers. You could say Patrick Norton and the new screensavers. Say them both.
Thanks.
Yeah, FreshBooks. I take it they're a sponsor on your tech thing, right?
They have been a sponsor.
They have been. FreshBooks.
I was using them long before they were a sponsor.
Me too. I was using them in 2004. I beat you on that one, I bet you. FreshBooks.com/NSS. Amber told me all about them, actually, because I was bitching. I hate doing invoices. So what do you think of this?
I think this box
is not cheap.
Okay.
This is a canary from Thinkst.
So you are a pen tester. You are a sysadmin. You are responsible for the security of our organization. You can go in and create and honeypot lots and lots of things to attract the nefarious hackers and attempt to snare them with your wily stuff, or which involves setting up and maintaining and dealing. Or you can send these guys like
$10,000
to get 5 of these boxes and have it all done in a way that is automated somewhat less painful.
What we did, we plug it into the Ethernet. We put it on our network. There's a Bluetooth pairing thing you can go through that makes it very easy to configure. You get a canary page. I just wanted to show you. This is our canary page. And there's two things you can do with canaries. There's canary tokens, and then there's the canary itself. My canary right now, you can see right here, is acting like a Synology NAS. Look at the services I've enabled. File transfer, web server, file share, port scan monitor, SSH. I've made it so that this canary looks exactly like a Synology. In fact, even down to the MAC address.
Bring the last window back up so I can try to like...
You want to break? You know,
I'm just going to ping it and see if we can get it to do something.
But this is the thing. The minute you ping it, by the way...
What's the IP address?
You want the address of my canary?
Give me the IP address.
All right, let me give you the address of my canary. I'll go back home. Should I tell people what they could ping it to?
It's going to be gone at the end of the show when you unplug it and strike the set.
No, I'm using it. All right, you ready? Actually, that's an internal address. So the idea is you would get into... Well, you're on our network.
Exactly.
10, that's right. 10.135.25.142. Don't try it outside because that's an internal address. But if let's say you're a bad guy. Here's the problem. Sony Picture Entertainment. The guys got into Sony in May. Sony didn't know anything about it till November. 6 months, these guys got to wander around inside the Sony network and really learn all about the network, exfiltrate gigabytes of information, and only then did they say, gotcha, Sony. You want to know the minute somebody gets in your network. So what you do is you create this honeypot. Configure it as you want. In fact, let me go back to the configuration because I'll show you. You don't have to just make it. You can say, here's you can say it's Linux 4.4, 2.6, Windows XP 8, 10, Server, Mac OS 10, a Cisco router, a Dell Power Connect. What, did you see me?
No, I'm on the wrong network.
Oh, yeah, you have
Your
to be on the same network as me.
Out.
Yeah, Rockwell Automation. You can even make this. I love this. What's that Siemens, those devices that in Iran... They broke them down. Remember
they were talking about the
centrifuges, right? They're controlled by, I can't remember the name of it. You can make it one of them. What?
Stuxnet.
Stuxnet. That's right. Stuxnet was designed. So you could say, yeah, I've got a centrifuge in here. What of it? You can. If I actually go to that address, I will get a Synology login. But you can change it to something else. You want it to be a Cisco router. You want it to be Apache 2. You want it to be Joomla, SharePoint. I make it look like exactly what I want. I've got OpenSSH. Now, the point is, none of this is what it appears to be. If you logged in, you've got that Synology page. The minute you try to, you hit that Synology page, I get a, you set this up. I can get a pager message. I can get a phone call. I can get an email. Somebody is in your network. I love this. So that's the first thing. And, but this is so cool. I can have Telnet. I can have FTP. I have VNC, time server. You know, time servers, I want to say UUTP. What is the time server protocol? NNTP, right? These time servers are notorious for people trying to use them for amplification attacks. So we'll put a time server on a network. Maybe somebody will use that, try to use it, and I will immediately get a notification. I think this is so cool. But that's just part of it. The other part is the Canary tokens, and I really like this. Now, Canary offers this for free through their server, but because I've got a Canary in our studio, I can make it a Canary server as well, and I can create a token that, let's say it looks like a Microsoft Word doc, and I'm going to say I can name this payroll information, because that bad guys like payroll information, right? I can actually create this new Canary token. I will get a file that is an MS Word doc, to all intents and purposes, with the name payroll information. I can put that anywhere I want on my network. The minute somebody tries to open it, I get notified.
Why isn't your phone blowing up?
Yes, you're in. You're in my Synology server. Isn't that awesome? It looks just like
awesome.
It, right? It is. I have
well,
it set
I'm
to
trying
the,
to log into it.
Yeah, no, you can't, though. That's the point. At this point, you're going to try, and I will see, by the way, every password you use. That's valuable also. I'll see whose name you use. Maybe you've compromised somebody's system. Looks exactly like a Synology disk station. That's not. That's this. That's the Canary you're logging into. And everything you type is going to be sent to me. You can, by the way, dedupe. There's all sorts of things you can do so that you don't get, you know, phony notifications. In fact, ideally, once you've installed these, you never hear from it again.
Right.
Because the next time you hear from it,
it means somebody's
Patrick Norton is knocking on your door.
Not me.
Anyway, I just wanted to show you this. This is really, they sent me one for review. I really think this is cool. We have used Canary tokens on our network for a long time. In fact, we talked about it on Security Now a couple of years ago as a free and easy way that people can put little just honeypots on your put it on your hard drive, put it on your file server.
Little honeypots all around the house.
Put it all over it. You can have as many tokens as you want. And it's even better if you have a Canary because you can. This will be the token server, which means they can't block the Thinkst servers.
So this, though, is more of an enterprise tool.
It is not for you and me unless you've got, you know, $7,500 lying around. Not for security. But I'll tell you what, an enterprise our size, you bet. Now, I have to say, if I were using this on our enterprise, I wouldn't tell anybody.
Ooh.
Because you want them to think that all these lovely little honeypots are just lying around. You don't want them to say,
the whole point of a honeypot is to attract flies.
Yes. Don't tell the flies you've got the Canary.
Have you gotten the notification?
It's not on this phone. Because I don't have them go to my personal phone.
Okay.
Although Russell is probably really freaked out right about now.
Russell.
I'm sorry, I forgot to tell you we were going to. He's still in the Philippines. Yeah. Poor Russell. Russell. Oh, my God.
So it'll be 2 in the morning. Yeah. And he's going to be like, oh, my God.
So we wanted to test it out because they were interested in advertising. I think I'll get back to them and say, but I'm going to let you bang on this a little bit.
You know what? See if I got a better idea. I got a friend who's a pen tester. Let him bang.
Oh, that's a great idea. You know, one of the reasons I was interested in Ryan Huber, who's the security guy at Slack, said this is the number one security device every large enterprise should have.
Really?
Yeah. Pretty cool.
Not
huh?
password management, you not think, securing the
should,
network.
Should we do some ads for him, you think? What do you think? I like it.
He's petting like a cat.
We're going to keep banging on it.
I mean, when I walked in, he actually was.
The only thing is I almost hate to talk about it because it is an inexpensive thing. But I do want to mention, for those of you at home who don't have thousands of dollars and don't have a large corporate network, go to Thinkst, T-H-I-N-K-S-T, I think it's Thinkst.com, and look at their Canary tokens. Those are free.
Or CanaryTokens.org.
Oh, that's probably it. Yeah. You can make as many as you want. It's the same idea. It's just a file that will ping you if somebody tries to open it.
Which is really cool and also really
free.
Is that
a great idea?
I think it's cool.
I think it's a great idea.
It's a great way also to find out if your kid brother's screwing around on your computer.
You know, every teenager should do that. Yeah. Nude photos here. Put them right there on the server. Right at the root level. Just see if the kid's messing with you.
Mom's credit card numbers.
I love it.
You're on my computer,
all
Mom.
My passwords.
I'm your parent.
Right
I can
here.
Do that.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to do a call for help. Here he is on the line from 29 Palms, California. And I think he's counted every single one of them. Christopher. Hi, Christopher.
Hey. How's it going?
So we were, Patrick and I, before the show, talking about the name 29 Palms. Are there more than 29 palms in 29 Palms?
You know, there's probably less now because over time, you know, with droughts and earthquakes and things, the water level has dropped in the oasis.
Oh, my
God. So there's fewer. So there's actually quite a bit fewer palms now in 29 Palms.
Fewer palms. Not more. Yeah. Fewer. Oh, my God.
It's always San Ignacio.
But it's a beautiful... It's like near Palm Springs, right? It's a beautiful area.
We're about an hour, actually, east and north of Palm Springs. As you're going out towards Joshua Tree.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
The town.
Beautiful, yeah.
And you go through Yucca Valley and then Joshua Tree, and then we're the last kids on the block at 29 Palms.
How nice. Did you grow up there?
Oh, no. No, I'm actually an East Coaster, a Connecticut Yankee, but I was moved out to L.A. back in 88. I've been out here since then, and then this is my getaway weekend place.
Nice. I need a getaway weekend place.
You have a getaway weekend place.
Right here.
Right there. There you go.
Welcome
right
to my
there.
Getaway weekend place. What can we do for you,
Chris? Nice.
What can we do for you, Christopher?
Okay, well, I've been considering a switch out of Apple platform to Microsoft platform. Yeah, I know, but it's okay. Partly it's because of doing landscape design work. And, you know, just in the world of design and other types of things that are more AutoCAD friendly, it's better, I think, and it seems like everyone else is on more of a PC platform in business world. You know, maybe not so much in the art and design platform, but for landscape design, I need to know how to be able to use AutoCAD. So it's just a little bit more friendly to go with the PC platform and be able to share things more easily, streamlining easily with people on the PC platform.
Well, and Apple hasn't updated the Mac Mini in how long? How many years?
Exactly.
A NUC is very much like a Mac Mini. It's actually smaller. It's Intel's new unit of computing, the worst name ever.
No,
but it's basically a mini. It's a mini PC, right?
They're great little boxes, right? They have the tiniest motherboard you've ever seen. You can get some fairly powerful ones with like four i7 processors.
I have an i7 NUC. I think it's got 32 gigs of RAM. It's my and I use it as a server. It's my home server. Right. By the way, it has Canary tokens on it, so don't try to log into it. Now, I don't know though. If I would make my NUC an AutoCAD desk workstation, you need a graphics card for that, right? To really do justice. You know, of course, the answer always is, it'll do it. How much time do you have?
Right.
Right? It's not going to not work. It's just going to be how slow.
Well, it depends. Okay, so it's funny because I was looking this up for... I was looking this up for Photoshop.
Photoshop's similar, right?
Yeah. Well, what's interesting about Photoshop... So. There's Puget Systems has some really fantastic benchmarking they've done, and I should have plugged my system into the network here, but I don't know if you can see like there's individual things inside of Photoshop.
You can hold it up.
For example, this is a Smart Sharpen, and if you never use Smart Sharpen, you're not going to care about the integrated graphics in that NUC. But if you do use Smart Sharpen, it's like 45 seconds. With the integrated graphics, and it's like 8 seconds with a 1050,
so in other words,
or
it works,
4 seconds with a
but it's 10 times slower or more.
And that's, yeah. I mean, and that's one of the challenges right now, right? Because if, because we were talking about this on Tech Thing this week, how Bitcoin and Ethereum mining have essentially made it impossible to buy a GPU or build a gaming PC or a video editing PC.
The
high-end
GPUs are
right now.
Gone from the, because everybody's buying them for their Bitcoin, you know, money.
We have the Bitcoin they can't actually mine without an ASIC.
So let me tell you this, the system requirements. Okay. This is what Autodesk says for AutoCAD 2016.
Right,
Windows
10. At.
You need a Pentium 4.
Okay.
Okay. I don't think that I would recommend that. Or an Athlon 64. Now, they do suggest 2 gigs of RAM. Again,
right.
4 gigs for 64-bit. So that's not very helpful. Their minimum
right.
is ridiculous.
Yeah,
1024 by 768. You know, don't want to do CAD.
What's no. nice, though, is our friends over at Puget Systems, who I love the fact they do a lot of benchmarking, they share it, they point out that if you're not doing 3D models on the screen, you don't particularly need a GPU.
Right.
However, if you're creating AutoCAD models for clients, you're probably doing a lot of 3D modeling on
you're
the
not
GPU.
Doing. Are, well, that's the question. You no. want to learn it, but yeah. are you going to do walkthroughs or flythroughs and things like that?
No.
I mean, were you thinking about
almost 2D because it's really landscape design is more in a 2D you know, platform, so it's
I'd
don't have to
be
go
more
to
than adequate for that.
Yeah, I think for that it should be fine. I mean, the other thing to think about is right now, you know, you can't up. You basically you buy a Nook and you might be able to swap the hard drive. You can probably put memory right. into it depending on which model you get, but you're right. done. So you also want to sort of buy the best Nook. You can. It's like buying a laptop right. where you're not really upgrading.
Can you put a GPU in a Nook?
Not really.
Could you use a Thunderbolt 3 external GPU? Do they even make Thunderbolt
3? I'll be honest with you. It's funny you should bring that up because we were talking about external Thunderbolt GPU enclosures on Tech Thing this week.
Of course you were.
And here's the thing. You can buy one for like, you know, an Akitio node, I think, costs like $250. Razer's got one for like $600. There's a couple others out there. Some of them disappeared. Mm. The problem is one, you're spending like $250 to $500 or $600 for the box, and then you're buying a GPU, although there's one from I can't think of the name of it, where they actually have a mobile 1070 built into it for like $600,
yeah.
which is probably the cheapest way to get a 1070. If you do need GPU acceleration right now, you probably want to take a look at a laptop with built-in GTX mobile graphics, which seem to be more available than the desktop graphics. So if you think, like, I'm going to be doing Photoshop, I'm going to be doing Premiere, I will need to do sort of 3D stuff inside of AutoCAD, a laptop right now is probably your best option because, you know, the $800 system I built last April with a $400 GTX 1070 I bought a couple months later is now, I want to say, if you can find the GPU, is going to be an $1,800 system.
Now, I got to say, here is something the chat room recommended. Gigabyte also makes NUX mini PCs. Mm-hmm. It doesn't look quite as small as the NUC we've been looking at, but this is their gaming version with a GTX 950. They also have a pro version with a GTX 1050i. Now, that isn't really going to be a NUC-sized device because it's going to be more like a rack mount kind of PC. But maybe that wouldn't bother you too much. I mean, it's, you know, it's got to be long enough to hold a 1050 Ti, but that's a heck of a... In other words, if you're willing to spend the money, you can do it.
Shuttle makes one with a 1060 built, GTX 1060 built into it.
Wow.
Well, I mean,
what was the
price
tag on that last one?
What's the shuttle cost? I don't know if I have a. Let me buy this. Let me just buy it and see. Yeah, why not?
It looks like you're looking at $1,300 for that.
Yeah, that's the problem. You know, you saw the minimum requirements. All that means is if you're going to run it, it will run on this something this low and slow. I think the new Intel Iris graphics are they're certainly not GPU, but they're better than the old ones.
I mean,
Iris Pro's pretty good. You can get motherboard graphics. It's going to get you in 2D a lot of the way.
Yeah. But if you start having to play around with Photoshop and stuff, you're
going to doing Photoshop too or just AutoCAD?
Just AutoCAD right now, but it would be, you know, I do a lot of digital photography, so that's another platform,
I mean, I'll be honest with you.
Lightroom doesn't run fast on anything.
Did you want the NUC because it's so small?
Probably because it's small. I mean, probably my space when I'm working out here, it's kind of a little bit, well, it's not really that confined, but I just want something that's not very visible and I can quickly, like, and undo it and put it in a safe spot, you know, as opposed to a bigger desktop. But you don't want to move that around
once
it's there.
Yeah.
But I would almost say if I would, you know, is the Nooks are cool. And for example, for a friend of mine that does training, and he puts six of them in a bag, and it's super easy for him to go to 17 airports in 19 days.
Yeah.
You know, with all of his training system, Nooks are fantastic for that. I would say, you know, I would rather you went with, like, you know, a mini ITX system or something where you could get a very, very tiny case for
like
it.
Like a shuttle.
A shuttle. Or there's so many options out there. And then you can build yourself. Because right now, GPUs have dropped so much in price over the last year. DDR memory, which has gone up in price, but is still not the biggest component.
Can you bring me up to speed on the GPUs? What's the GPU stand for? Sorry.
Well, the graphics card.
Yeah, the 3D accelerator graphics card.
Okay, that's what I figured.
In the last 8-10 months, a $400 GPU that should have been selling for $380 is now selling for $1,000 if you can actually find one for sale.
Because of Bitcoin mining.
Because of Ethereum mining, really.
What about, Ethereum, what about, did you see at CES any new machines, NUC or not, with the new Intel/AMD processor? Because Intel announced
those
a deal.
Those are going to be showing up in laptops in the next couple months.
They're coming soon. There's KB Lake G. Intel is partnering, weirdly enough, with AMD to put an AMD graphics processor in the chip.
Yeah.
Have you guys looked at the benchmarking on Twitch?
They don't exist yet.
So it's too early to say. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, what I would say is, you know, I've got a, you know, like an S4 mini, nfc-systems.com. And, you know, this is maybe not the one you want to buy because it's a pretty fancy case.
Oh, look how small that is. But that's mini ITX case.
Yeah, literally, I have one of these sitting on my desk at home. It's incredibly tiny. It supports like an 8-inch GPU. But I just want to say, like, getting a mini ITX system, you know, you don't have to buy this fancy case, but you can have a very, very small, easy to hide system that should you find yourself in a year going, oh, I really wish I had GPU acceleration for my desktop, you can add it later.
Because it's got a slot.
Like the Nooks, you got a Nook, and that's all you can do with the Nook except for put a bigger hard drive in it or maybe some more memory.
So he asked what it costs, but it really depends. We're just talking a form factor, mini ITX.
Yeah, mini ITX is essentially like it's a very small motherboard, and then you just put regular components into it.
That's the key, is it holds regular components.
Yes.
So it's still a build-yourself type of system.
Yeah. Well, you could
go to Newegg and get a bare-bones mini ITX kit, you know, system, right?
If you want to buy an already assembled system, just buy an inexpensive, like find the smallest desktop system that Dell or HP or Puget Sound or anybody else will sell to you, and buy that, because I don't want you to turn around in a year and be like, you know, I got this $900 Nook and I can't fix the things that make it slow.
Yeah.
That's the part that, you know.
I really like that solution. Sure. I'm looking, you know, motherboards are under $200.
Mm-hmm. You can get a motherboard for like $80.
Yeah, for the mini ITX form factor. Yeah. Here's a bare bones $450 with a Intel processor, motherboard, DDR3. There's quite a variety. $299.
So who makes this ITX?
It's a standard. It's made by everybody.
It's like an ATX motherboard, except it's a smaller spec.
So, I see.
And so the nice thing is that it will handle a standard. It's got PCI Express in there. So it'll handle a PCI Express graphics board.
I could
down the road.
I mean,
if you
could take my, you know, Ryzen 7 1800X and put it on a mini ITX motherboard.
That's
pretty cool. They make motherboards for that.
That's pretty cool.
You know, I'd say buy the smallest. Twisted Mister, you have no idea what you're talking about.
He's talking to the chat room. Don't take it.
Sorry. I'm running 90 watt CPUs on many ITX motherboards. Yeah. They're fine. It's just a small size for a motherboard. There we go. Nooks typically use 50 watt CPUs. Totally with you on that one, Twisted Mister.
So you can use higher wattage CPUs.
You can essentially, it's just a very small motherboard. You know, you just want to make sure, you know, you get one that actually has a PCI Express slot. I mean, I would say even not just buy the least expensive desktop that'll do what you want to do. And then if you need to upgrade it in a year, you have that opportunity. Like, I love Nooks, but, you know, you can't really upgrade them if you want to or need to. And that can be really, really frustrating.
I'm just looking at PC Perspective. Your partner, Ryan Shroud, on This Week in Computer Hardware runs a great site. He, of course, reviews mini ITX. This is a mini ITX motherboard from MSI. He reviews all of these. I wonder, does he, in his hardware leaderboard, I wonder if he has an ITX or mini ITX system.
They're
probably
pretty much
not
all ATX.
They're all standard big size ATX. But that would be the kind of thing to look for. It sounds like you want to build your own.
Yeah, I just like the idea of being able to put it together, and it's a little less. It seemed like initially it was a little less expensive to do it, go that route, as opposed to something that's already, you know, ready to go, plug and play. But
well, I would absolutely use Newegg as a resource. Mm-hmm. They have all the components, but also get a bare bones system, which doesn't yet have the RAM. It doesn't have some of the components, then you can start with that. It's all together. And then add the stuff that you needed on top of that.
And take a look at PCPer.com is the website. PCPer.com/leaderboard is Ryan's website. And it'll give you a list of builds. And I would look at those builds, you know, pull the GPU out for now because you don't really need a GPU. I have this feeling I'm going to get an email from somebody I know that uses AutoCAD. They're going to be like, you idiot! What were you thinking? But take a look at those builds, and those will give you a good starting shopping list. You know, compare those to what's available in the white boxes from Newegg, and kind of, you know, ask some questions. PC Part Picker is an amazing resource for getting advice on what a good solid build is, and have fun with it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It does seem like that's a better choice than going the NUC size.
You're committed with it. It's like buying a laptop.
Yeah.
You're done.
I got the NUC because I was going to run a server. It's basically running Minecraft. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted something small. You know, it didn't take a lot of space, didn't have a lot of heat, and I could just plug into the network. It's running headless.
Right.
So it's just like a little box that's just running headless in my closet. That's a good use for
a
NUC.
That's a perfect NUC use.
I think if you want what you're doing, you want a PC. One step up, that's all, the mini ITX. That's actually a really good advice, I think.
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, I'll go that route and take a look at that and, you know, noodle around on Newegg for sure. Seem like the... probably the best place to go.
They
for
have a
any
lot
kind
of choices
of
in there.
And stuff, so.
Yeah, and I agree. PC Per is a great place too. Hey, thank you, Christopher.
All right, thanks
enjoy
a lot, guys.
Enjoy your new newfound NUC, newfound hobby. You know the problem is ITX. It doesn't roll off the tongue like
that. Yuck, yuck, yuck.
Thank you, Christopher.
I don't know. All right,
guys. Florence Ion's going to be here next week. If you've got an Android question for the host of All About Android, here's how you ask.
Need tech help? The new screensaver with answers. Email your tech questions to newscreensavers@twit.tv.
Got another hardware review for you coming up in just a second. Megan Maroney, she's going to talk about a roll-your-own personal cloud. But first, a word from our sponsor, Rocket Mortgage. I just saw home loan interest rates. They're going up. Now's the time.
You've
been thinking about refinancing. This is it. This is it. If you're buying a new home, now's the time to go to rocketmortgage.com/NSS. They come from Quicken Loans. Of course, Quicken Loans, best lender in the country. I mean, absolutely. Not only one of the biggest, but number one in customer satisfaction for mortgage servicing and their mortgage approval process year after year after year. That's J.D. Power. So you could trust them. Number one, I think because of Rocket Mortgage. Rocket Mortgage is their completely online mortgage approval process. You could do the whole thing on your computer, on a tablet, but best of all, you could do it on your phone at an open house. It's that easy. It's that fast. You don't need to go to a bank to get a home loan anymore. You can go to rocketmortgage.com/NSS. Answer a few basic questions, stuff you know. You don't have to look up, you know, your social security number, your address, date of birth. They have trusted relationships with all the financial institutions. They can get the information they need. You don't have to go to the attic and find pay stubs and bank statements or call the bank and say, could you send this over? No, no more of that anymore. They do it all online and literally with just a few questions. In minutes, they'll crunch the numbers based on income, assets, and credits, offer you the best loan opportunities that you qualify for. You choose the down payment. You choose the rate. You choose the term. You're approved. I'm telling you, in minutes, at an open house, you could literally start the process and finish it. And before you go out the door, say, I got the loan. Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. You apply simply. You'll understand every step of the way fully. And then you'll mortgage confidently. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/NSS, Equal Housing Lender. Licensed in all 50 states and MLSConsumerAccess.org, number 3030. Do it on your phone. You know what the best thing to do? Sign up right now. Get it started. You don't have to apply. Just get the account set up. at least bookmark it, rocketmortgage.com/NSS. And then, you know, figure out, is it time to refi? It might be. It might very well be. Maybe you're at an open house tomorrow and you say, I think we should get this house. You'll be ready to go. Rocketmortgage.com/NSS. We thank them for their support for the new screensavers. We're going to go to the mailbag in just a little bit. But first, Megan Maroney with a look at her own personal cloud, the Apollo system watch.
You know you're a grown-up when you find the need for your own personal cloud. That's the position I found myself in after reading about one too many security breaches and accidental losses of data. I also wanted more control over my photos and other backups. Enter the Apollo Cloud 2 Duo from Promise. This $450 device is a 4 terabyte personal cloud that's easy to set up and manage from any phone, tablet, or computer anywhere. It also looks nice and blends in with the decor of my home office, a needed improvement over the original Promise Apollo that was a bit bulkier. To use the Cloud 2 Duo, simply plug it in and install the app on any and all of your devices. They have apps for Mac, Windows, iPhone, iPad, and Android. They also support Time Machine backups to regularly backup everything on your Mac to your cloud. If you're frustrated with monthly subscription fees for cloud storage and the idea of setting up your own home NAS seem too complicated, Apollo Cloud 2 Duo might be for you. You can invite up to 39 others to your cloud, which makes it great for families, friends, and small businesses. If you take a lot of video that you like to share for fun or for work, the Apollo Cloud 2 Duo solves the problem of storing and sharing huge files. If you've installed a security camera to monitor your home, you also know how quickly those videos take up space. The Apollo supports IP camera streaming from up to 2 cameras. You can control live streams, view daily briefs, and even create clips to share your video. Photos and personal videos are what takes up most of the space in the cloud storage services that I've paid for in the past. The Apollo app has some great features for photo storage and retrieval. If you're used to Google Photos, you'll recognize tools like finding photos by place with GPS location or finding photos by person with facial recognition. The app creates short videos for you to share with music, and you can share individual photos with members of your cloud or share them publicly. Other pros about this device include the ability to auto-upload your camera roll and to swipe to select several photos at once to delete. You also have easy access to the LAN and USB port in the back and the ability to mirror 2 or more Apollo Cloud devices. $450 is not cheap. Apple currently charges only $10 a month for 2 terabytes. So if you're planning on using all 4 terabytes, it will take you 2 years to break even. And if all you want is a place to store every photo you take for the rest of your life, Google will do that for free. Not at the highest quality, but at a quality that probably works fine for most of us. But what's the point of having this great camera if we aren't storing photos at the highest quality? And as Joanna Stern pointed out in the Wall Street Journal this week, it's super frustrating to pay Apple more money to back up our phones when we've just paid them upwards of $1,000 for the phone itself. She calls this the Apple tax. But unlike real taxes, we don't have to pay this one. At least we don't have to pay to Apple. If you're sick of paying Apple or Dropbox or OneDrive or whoever you're currently renting cloud space from, why not consider buying? With the Apollo Cloud 2 Duo, you can store all your highest quality photos and videos, and you don't have to worry about running out of space. You don't have to worry about privacy or security. I am Megan Maroney, and I host iOS Today every Tuesday morning at 9 and Tech News Weekly every Thursday afternoon at 2:30.
I pay, was it $1.99 a month to Apple for 50 gigs? Or maybe, no, it's 200 gigs. 200 gigs. Hmm. I mean, it's not 4 or 8 terabytes, but I mean, $450, $2 a month would take me 10 years to pay for that Apollo.
Well, that's assuming you trust iCloud. iCloud is functioning.
Yeah.
The Mac ecosphere.
True. I mean, actually, I have a 20 terabyte Synology at home. By the way, somebody was logging into my Synology. 9 times this guy tried to
I was
log
waiting for
in.
Your phone to go off.
But what's neat is that's the Canary's interface. You could see what names you use, so right. I can get an idea of how much you know about our system. If you used my name, which you did, this guy knows more about where he's, you know, it's not some guy from China just trying stuff, banging on stuff. It's somebody I know, damn it. What did you say, Bob Mackey?
Who knows?
Bob Hoskins? You have an interesting mind, my friend, an interesting mind. Let's take a look at the mailbag. So nice to have Patrick Norton here in studio with us. Techthing.com?
T-E-K-T-H-I-N-G.com.
If you want to know more, and that's Patrick's regular show. And, of course, he's on This Week in Computer Hardware every week with Ryan Schrout here on this very network. And look at this. Jerry's been going back. You know, Jerry used to work with us at ZDTV. He's been going back into his ZDTV prize closet and finding all sorts of old...
Is that a 2XL?
You can't have it. It is.
That's
you
so
can't
funny.
Have it because it's still sealed. And someday this is going to be worth something.
I never even got any of those shirts.
I know. Jerry got stuff I never even heard of.
What's up, Jerry? Were you next to the marketing office?
Yeah, the marketing.
There seemed
folks.
To be the swag never seemed to make it very far beyond marketing.
No.
It was like a row of cubicles, and they all had the cool T-shirts and the sweatshirts and the clocks.
The best thing once a fan came by
dishes.
And gave me something, a cube or something that he bought on eBay, and I said,
I know who he bought that from.
And I said, I never saw that. He said, here, have it. So I have it now because he bought it on eBay. He felt bad. Because I never even saw it. You want it?
I'm good.
Okay. You know who was selling that on eBay?
I'm pretty sure if it's what I think it is.
Son of a gun.
Was it like a...
Yeah, it was the glass cube they gave away. I don't know why I didn't get one, but... email number one. I shall start.
I think you were gone by then.
Oh, yeah. Maybe that's it.
You'd quit.
I'd already quit.
You'd abandoned us.
No, I came back after I quit. Remember that? I was only quit for a month. It's
it
a long story.
It was very strange.
Nobody's very interested. I came back, and then they fired me. So it worked out. Email number one, Leo and Patrick.
I thought
Patrick.
You left for the radio gig.
No.
So many stories floating
so,
around.
So
we should stop. There's a great viewer question here.
I know there is, but this is more interesting. So, no, because they wanted, so you really want to know the story?
Remember I don't know if they got, want to know the story.
Remember we got a stock grant? Remember that? Where they, Larry, the CEO, Larry Quagmire, what was his name?
Whatever.
He brought us in. Quagmire brought us in, one by one, and he did something you're not supposed to do. He did a little back of envelope. He said, we're going to give you 100,000 shares. Now, if this channel were to be worth $2 billion, that's going to be $5 million.
Yeah, see, I wasn't
you're
there
not
this,
supposed to do that.
I didn't get this conversation.
You weren't. You may not have been there. This was the very beginning.
Oh, I was there. I was there for lunch.
And you didn't get a grant?
I got a grant, but nobody sat me down and gave me a song.
Well,
that
was a bad thing, because I'm saying... $5 million. I have $5 million. So as it went under and it became worth less and less, Paul Allen decided he was going to get all his money out, but we weren't going to get any of that. So they said, well, you need to sign this paper that says you'll never sue us over offering you all of this money and never giving you any. And I said, I'm not going to sign that paper. And they said, well, you can't stick around then. We can't renew your contract. So I said, fine. And I walked out the door because I wasn't going to sign that. Then I talked to a lawyer and said, sign it. You can't sue them anyway. You got nothing, kid. So I came back a month later. I said, never mind. And I signed the piece of paper that said, I will never sue you. And they hired me and then rehired me. So then I was back.
Right.
And we were doing the new screens or the old screensavers.
The screensavers.
And then they sold the whole damn caboodle to Comcast like one
Not
month
they,
later.
Paul Allen.
Huh?
Not they. Paul Allen.
Paul Allen, Focus the guy, the owner. They. The owner. He took his money, and he lost hundreds of millions of dollars on it. It's not like he made money on tech TV. But and then, just like you,
right.
They called me in and said, we won't be needing your services after next
No, month. I didn't even get that.
You didn't get that?
Well, that was another. That's
Vinny Longobardo didn't ask you in and say...
I never met.
You never met Vinny Longobardo?
No, I said... They said
you could cut this all out, right? Larry Quagmire,
no,
he was great.
The person who called me in was part of the staff, and I said he was having a bad day. I said, look, I'm gonna make this so easy for you. He's like, how are you gonna make this easy for me? He said, I know they want to split. They basically don't want the talent to be the managing editor, and they don't want the managing editor to be the talent. I said, you tell them I asked for twice as much money for them to pay to me to move down, and I refuse to give up the managing editor if I'm going to co-host. He's like, they won't do that. I'm like, see how easy I just made this for you? And he started laughing.
You don't have to fire me. I quit.
We were all laid off.
Yeah.
You know.
I wasn't laid off.
Well,
I think what happened, I don't remember what happened. All I know is
it was
he
a
gave
long
me,
time ago.
It was Vinny Longobardo gave me a piece of paper, said, they're looking for somebody in Canada. Why don't you go up north?
It's more than I got.
I went to Canada.
Blame Canada.
Nobody cares. This was 100 years ago.
No.
But it is. What
it's
it is,
almost 20 years
It is
ago.
How they broke 20. Up the... It's almost 20. 20 May 11th ago. Will be the 20th.
How crazy is that? Yeah. You used to have dark hair. I used to have hair. Half of you probably weren't even born yet.
Email number one. Dear old farts, is it worth my time and money to begin mining cybercurrency? And how?
Oh,
USB farm on my Mac. Signed, Gary.
Well, I got a friend who's making, I think, I could be wrong, but I think, without revealing any details, I want to say he's got 18 or 20 systems in his garage. He's bought GPUs before the prices get out of control. So he's got to have at least 3 GPUs in those boxes.
Each.
So I want to say he's got about $20,000 invested in hardware, and he lives in a part of the country that has the lowest electrical rate in the country.
That's kind of the key, because the way it all works out, yeah. And I think this is intentional on the part of the designers of Bitcoin.
Well, it's not Bitcoin. Let me make some clear. You can't mine Bitcoin unless you have ASIC miners or access to all the.
This isn't. Don't
Bitcoin.
Even
this
try is, Bitcoin.
Don't even bother. Like if you're
Dogecoin.
If you're
mine
starting,
Dogecoin.
Work on Ethereum.
Ethereum is the next best.
Ethereum's kind of
that's
the next
number
best
two
thing.
Currency right now. The reason Satoshi did this, it made it harder and harder. Right. It seems like intentionally, and I don't know if this guy was a genius, because it's kind of matched to the cost of electricity. So as the value of Bitcoin has gone up, it turns out it's very closely matched to the cost it would be
much
to generate
like extracting gold or oil from underneath the surface of the planet. It gets harder and harder as you dig more and more of it out.
So don't even think about mining Bitcoin.
Yeah, Bitcoin.
Unless you're in China next to a hydroelectric dam and your electricity's free.
And you have a staggering amount of money to drop on hardware, which you can't even get because they want to buy that hardware in Bitcoins, and it's a mess, right? Like, I think the ASIC boxes, the dedicated Bitcoin mining boxes, I want to say are around $2,000 to $4,000 right now.
So let's say he wants to mine Ethereum. Is it easy? You don't need as big a box?
Yeah, it's less challenging, but I mean, if you're mining,
can you make money on it?
It depends.
Does your friend make
it
money?
It depends on how much you spend on electricity. Our you know, in pre-show, one of the folks in the chat room, like they're in, where they are in Southern California Edison, I think they start at 17
that's what he said.
Cents per kilowatt.
Tier 2 is 26 cents.
And then tier 3 is like, he can't make any money. Unless he's got solar cells in the backyard, he's not making any.
So it's not merely the capital cost for the
equipment.
You got to pay for the power
yeah.
to keep it going. And now, John is mining. What are you mining, John?
Phantom coin.
Phantom coin. But he's in a pool.
Right.
He's in a pool.
And a pool is essentially you get a whole bunch of people working together to accelerate the rate at which you are extracting your mythical currency from the mythical currency
network. You divide the mythical currency up among all the people in the pool.
Yeah, I mean, look.
He made $5.
If you want
last week, $5?
Yeah,
2 weeks.
If you want to mine. Keep an eye on your electrical bill. Because I know, you know, one person I know, like, they turned on all the machines that they had access to. Let's call it 40 machines. And you know, I think their electrical bill went up like $800 that month.
Right.
Because they had all of their machines running at 100% for 24 hours.
But if you mine one
Bitcoin,
you're
not going to mine a Bitcoin.
Oh.
Just get off. Bitcoin's done, man. It's over. Either send the laptop to my friend or let my friend access the laptop and you can have your Bitcoin.
I'll give him a Bitcoin if he cracks into my wallet.
I'll make a call after the show. You know.
You want first crack?
Well, Russell and I.
There are brute forcers, but I know I didn't use some lame monkey 123. I used a long, strong password. I just forgot to write it down.
Yeah, in any case, you know, if you want to start Bitcoin mining. Take a look at Ethereum. Take a look at any of the other coins out there. But just understand, like, you know, you're not going to be like, I mined a Bitcoin and I made $10,000 this month unless you spend a staggering amount of money on hardware and electricity.
Some of this is based on the notion, maybe fallacious, that coin or fraction of coin you're going to mine is going to be worth 1,000 times more in a few years.
Well, that's speculation.
That's speculative.
We also call that betting.
And if you're a betting person and you don't mind paying a whole bunch of electricity now for something that may be worth less than an aardvark's ass in 2 years, by all means, spend the electrical money now. But spend the money on electricity and hardware now. But it's you are guessing.
That is speculation.
Yeah, it's speculation. Yeah. Much like walking into the desert and digging a hole in the ground and looking for gold. Some people found gold. Some people died in the desert. You know,
you might find sand.
You might find sand. Lots of sand.
What's your question?
Leo, you were talking about security at a public place. You never mentioned using your phone as a hotspot. How secure is your computer when using your phone as a hotspot? Or is your phone more secure than using your computer when browsing the internet? Gary, a different Gary than on the other email.
I think that, now I'll let you answer, but my general impression is that the cell systems are pretty secure. The digital cell systems. There are issues that, you know, the radio can be hacked and so forth. But assuming that your phone has not been hacked.
Assuming your phone
has not
been
hacked. And that somebody's not cloning your phone,
right,
which is a lot of effort and skill, it's more secure than an open Wi-Fi access point, for sure.
Yeah, I mean,
it's as secure as your home network. Let's put it that way.
Up until about a year ago, I would actually use my phone to connect to the internet at DEF CON.
Wow.
And then they started spoofing cell towers, and suddenly I didn't want to use my phone internet at DEF CON. But if
about pairing your laptop to your phone, using your phone as a hotspot? Now you're on Wi-Fi.
I basically plug it.
You're saying tether.
Yeah, I either tether. I mean, if I'm feeling paranoid, or if I just want to charge my phone, which is actually an issue with my phone, like I plug my phone via USB into my laptop.
Then you're not using Wi-Fi. It's directly connected. Yeah.
And the truth is, I don't think I'm going to be working in any one place with Wi-Fi to my phone long enough for somebody to try to crack that connection.
Yeah, don't do it for more than 5 minutes.
But yeah, I mean, like if I'm in McCarran Airport, well, or you know, probably longer than that. I'm in McCarran Airport, I'm using my phone to connect to the internet, not McCarran's. You know,
you'd
Wi-Fi.
Have to be targeted. Somebody would have to be going after.
Well, you could be targeted, right? Yeah, you could be in terms of as a general rule of thumb, right? If McCarran comes to mind because it's one of the first places that had free internet in an airport. And people love that.
Made me very nervous.
It should, right? Because all I can think is somebody's going to be there. They're going to like plug, you know, a router that says free Wi-Fi into the corner. And then they're going to basically skim all of the packets that go over their fake router, their honeypot, if you will. And this is a bad thing. So when I'm in an airport, I use my phone's internet connection.
Could I use, if I use my phone as a hotspot, in other words, not physically connected to the laptop, but a Wi-Fi connection, would I then be vulnerable to the Pineapple and other Wi-Fi jacking tools?
Yeah.
Because I'm now in Wi-Fi.
Assuming somebody's in there and targets you and has the time to do it and the expertise.
Right. They're not looking for McCarran Wi-Fi now. They're looking for something that says something like Patrick's Pixel 2 XL.
Yeah.
And then they see that, they might be able to get...
But what are they going to do?
I don't know.
You know, I mean, you can also run a VPN over your phone to the internet.
Yeah, but that's the question. I think he wants to avoid that, right?
Yeah.
He's thinking, is it sufficient to use my phone? I'd say yes.
Anywhere outside of a hacking convention or when you start seeing the news reports that say cell towers in major urban metropolitan America is a
big blah, blah, blah. Stingers, right? They're called
stingrays.
Stingrays.
They're a pain in my ass, is what they're called.
And they're not good because they pose as a cell tower. You join them. And then they have access to all your traffic as if you were...
If you have a good HTTPS connection, you know, over your phone, which your apps, you know, your banking apps...
That's the other thing. If you're on Gmail or the bank or Amazon, it's secure in addition to whatever security your phone has. There's layers and
security
layers.
Security in depth and layers.
Short answer, Gary, yes, you're safe.
Yeah. Until you're not. And we'll tell you about... Well, you're laughing, but that's it, right? You know... Everything's safe until it's proved, you know, until it's broken. Everything's unbreakable until some 19-year-old with 10,000, you know, video cameras that have been turned into a botnet assaults it.
That's true.
Welcome to the 21st century. It's so exciting.
Anything else you want to plug about? You're doing the tech thing. You're doing Twitch. You have an ICO?
I do not have an ICO. Okay. I have a podcast about home theater and audio.
Robert Herron, right?
Yeah, we've been going in depth on all the new. And actually, I was on the news show here talking about all of the new televisions that showed up at CES 2018. If you're thinking about buying a new television, we got the advice on all the new televisions that are
out there. What's the name of that
show? That is AVExcel, AVExcel.com. And it's a podcast.
And we love Robert. And we love you, and Robert's, I think that's going to be a lot of fun talking about TVs with Robert Herron and Patrick Norton.
It's very casual.
As a good podcast should be. We don't want formal here, right? Formal is for stiffs.
Motion to begin the adjournment of the end of the new Screensavers episode 100.
It drives me crazy. I'm listening to a very, very popular podcast. Right. Well, no, I don't want to name names. But he's obviously listened to too many NPR-style podcasts. Right. So he kind of talks like this. And then he's got the music playing. And Gary didn't know that this would be a different day for him. And it's like, stop
some
it.
People like production.
I don't want it. Just give me the news. Okay. Enough. Enough. We don't do that here. As you probably have noticed, we're a little discursive.
Welcome to Team Grip It and Rip It here in Petaluma, California. Woo! Get some!
We do this show with great people like Patrick Norton every Saturday, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 2300 UTC. If you want to come by and watch live, go to twit.tv/live. You can, if you're going to do that, you should really be in the chat room. And Patrick's not here every day to abuse you, so please feel free. You're safe. No, you and Twisted
there was
Mister,
no abuse.
You made up. It's okay. He apologized. If you want to be in the chat room, irc.twit.tv is a lot of fun in there. It really is. Mm-hmm. You can also watch on demand. You don't have to watch in our schedule. You can watch on your schedule. Just go to twit.tv/NSS or subscribe. Your favorite podcatcher will for sure have this show and every other show we do, so you can get every episode the minute it's published out there on the internet. You can also be in studio. We thank our studio audience. If you want to be here in studio, don't surprise us. Patrick has been known to lash out from time to time.
That's not true.
No.
They've got security at the front of the doors. It's big time.
That's who will lash
They're
out.
They're real casual until it comes to walking in the front door. And the guy looks up at me going, who the hell's the lumberjack?
Email tickets at twit.tv.
There was one Oreo incident. Involving an international incident.
Don't forget, we got our survey going, and we do this once a year. It's because we don't want to spy on you. The rest of the year, we don't want to know anything about you. We don't have spy tokens on our website or anything like
Lies.
That. No, we don't.
I'm kidding.
But we do. Sponsors want to know who's listening, and we want to know more about you. So
who
once
are these
a year,
people we're paying for.
Once a year, we do a little survey. You take it or not. It's fine if you don't want to. That's fine. But if you do, it would help us. It's just a few questions, a couple of minutes of your time at twit.tv/survey. It does help us, too, because we get a better idea of how you listen, what you listen to, things like that. twit.tv/survey. Thank you, Patrick.
My pleasure.
Always great to see you. Come back anytime.
Thank you for watching.
And thank you all for watching. That's right. We'll see you next time on the new Screensavers. Bye-bye. Whoa.